So welcome, everybody. The year just seems to be rolling right along. And as Nathan pointed out, we're almost at fiscal year end, which I know makes it really busy for everyone. So I appreciate you joining our conference call today. This is our second one for RP 101 Plan for Success. And I'm thrilled to be hosting this from the traditional territories of the Kwinlan Dun First Nation and Ton Kwachin Council. I also wanted to let you know that this is probably out of all of our core learning events, it's the hardest learning event, so you will really enjoy the next three. I planned it specifically that way, so we wind down at the end of the year towards when you earn your certificate. That's for those of you who started in September. So I see David's joining, and David, we're in the chat that is in the learning event, not on the computer link. Just so you know where we're at. So last week we explored planning from an outcomes-based perspective. And what this means is that we have planned to achieve benefits of recreation, such as those we talked about last week. And we talked a lot about ones that relate to feeling a sense of belonging, community connections, things like that, also physical and mental health as well. I found it really interesting. I did post last week a chart showing the responses to the first required learning activity, which was to choose an output or outcome and to decide whether the statement was which one of those. And for the most part, there wasn't 100% agreement on most of them. So it's still something that even as we become more familiar with sort of outcomes and outputs, is still that language can challenge us a little bit. So we have to think through that if we're asked to use it in the work that we're doing. So this week we're going to move beyond sort of what are outcomes and outputs, and we're going to look at some different ways that you can frame a plan. And this is a bit bigger than a plan that you did in PE 101 right after Christmas, where you designed a plan for a program, an activity, or a special event. This is a broader plan. It might be for a big project that you're running over the summer, over a year. It could be a combination of programs for youth after school. That's a pretty big scale thing that you want to plan. It could be something that you're looking for funding to support as well. It could also be, in some cases, a longer-term strategic plan. So, for example, I'm supporting the Recreation and Parks Association of the Yukon right now to renew their 5-year strategic plan, and I've also been asked to work with Sport North Federation in NWT to do the same for them. So those are bigger, high-level plans. So keep in mind we're not talking about your day-to-day planning here. We're talking about much broader strategic plans or bigger ones that are involved with more programming. So we'll do our agenda today will be similar to most of our calls. We'll start with some introductions. Then we're going to look at those planning processes and frameworks using slides 18 to 26, if you have them available. And then talk about a little bit more about strategic planning, planning within the different cultural contexts that you live and work in. So we've got a lot to talk about today, and I think people tend to find this a good conversation. It is a lot broader than your day-to-day operations, so just keep that in mind. So let's begin with the introductions, and I'd like you I've got in 30 seconds or less on my question, but I'm going to make it shorter than that. So in about 10 seconds or less, I'd like you to introduce yourself and share one thing in a planning process that you believe is always important to do and why. And the order I have listed right now is based on the order that you joined the call, but I'll go first just to give you an idea. So we'll go from me to Gian, Scott, Peter, Trista, Nathan, and David, and then we'll rotate our order for each round of questions. So here's my example, and then we'll go to Gian and then Scott. So as you guys know, my name's Caroline, and I believe that it's always important to put my plan on paper. So that, for me, is something that's really important. If the plan is only in my head, which it often is, it's hard to explain to other people, And sometimes it morphs and changes without me being really aware of it. So putting things on paper when I'm planning is really important for me. So, Guyane, over to you. In 10 seconds or less, quickly introduce yourself and share one thing in a planning process that you believe is important to do and why.
Hey, everyone. Yam here from Squash Yukon. Whenever we plan, the most important factor I look into is the budget. So we need to look the budget first, then, you know, accordingly we can do the planning. That's the most important thing for me, I guess.
Thanks, Guyane. And that's a really good point is planning is great, but if you don't have the budget to go along with it, there's not a lot of point of planning. Thanks for sharing that. Scott, over to you. What's one thing in a planning process that you believe is always important to do and why?
Hi, Scott. I am Executive Director of the Hay River Youth Center. And an important part of planning process is to make sure that everyone knows what's expected of them.
And how do you approach that in the planning process?
Well, just involving people who need to be involved and making sure that you have good communication about, you know, who's going to be involved in what capacity and what that means for them, and, you know, what's expected of them and that sort of thing.
Okay, great. So what I'm hearing you say when you use the word involved is that you don't tell people after you've done the plan what they're supposed to do. You involve them in developing that plan?
Yeah, in some respects, but also making sure that people at least have communication beforehand about what their involvement is going to be, rather than kind of learning as it's happening.
Right. So communication, and then you get that buy-in, right? So your plan is probably based on what you're saying. If everyone knows what's expected of them, they're involved, and you have good communication, your plan's probably more likely to be successful.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, Scott. Over to you, Peter. In 10 seconds or less, introduce yourself and what's one thing in a planning process you believe is always important to do and why?
Hello, Peter, active coordinator for RPA. One thing that I think is really important is to always kind of communicate your ideas to other people and see how they feel, because you definitely have like a bias, and it's important to get input from everyone, and they can give you perspectives that you might not have considered yet.
Awesome. That's great, because then it also expands your perspective. And I think planning, if it's that high-level planning we're talking about, it's better to make sure that we've got multiple ideas reflected in a way that everybody can see themselves as part of that plan. Thanks, yeah. Peter. Trista's introduced herself. She's a recreation programmer in Ignace, Ontario, and she likes to keep detailed notes on her planning, which allows her to make notes of changes for the next event. So, yeah, so planning, a plan isn't a plan just to sit on the shelf once it's done. It's actually useful. So thank you for that, Trista. Nathan, how about yourself? What's one thing in a planning process you believe is important to do?
Yeah, my name's Nathan Nunout. I'm the recreation coordinator for Baker Lake Nunout. I like to put in big letters on the top of the plan, sort of like the mission statement, what I want to do, what I want out of the event or whatever I'm planning, because when I start going, I start to ramble and go off topic and then start writing stuff that have absolutely nothing to do with what I'm trying to do. So I always look back at the top to stay on track, to stay on topic.
That's awesome, and that's something that, especially with a strategic plan, when you look at the frameworks, we've got like a vision and a mission, and there is a difference between the two, but having that sort of touchstone or the that direction in front of you all the time, that's a really good suggestion. Thank you, Nathan. And David, over to you. What's one thing in a planning process you believe is always important to do?
Your measurables, your outcome. What is it that your end result. Why are you doing the program? So if you don't have a means of measuring your outcomes, then you're just running in circles with no results.
Okay, so you're sort of taking you're going from a plan to perhaps that's more of a logic model where you explain what your outcomes are, and then maybe a bit more towards evaluation where you're indicating how you're going to measure it. So if you backtrack from that, what I would hear you saying is in a plan, it's always important to understand where you're going so that you have
right.
that or where you want to be. So that direction, last week we talked about know where you are right now, know where you want to go, and know how you're going to get there. So the where you want to go is the outcome, and how you're going to get there, there's many different ways there. And then you're saying that take that one step further and identify ways that you'll know when you get there because you'll be able to measure or figure it out.
Right, and it's by knowing your measurables, you can determine whether or not you've covered your basis in the plan. You know,
that's right.
Yeah.
Thanks, David. So those are all different activities that are involved with this big picture planning that we're kind of talking a little bit more about here. And so you can see from that there's a number of different activities that are involved with planning. And so as you've mentioned, planning is easier when you and the people that you work or volunteer with have a common understanding of the activities that you're doing, the vision or mission that you're working towards, what you're trying to accomplish, and also kind of an understanding of the planning terms that are introduced in activity number 4. So to talk about outcomes with volunteers, if they don't know what outcomes are, that's a really hard thing to do. So a part of working with other people in our plans is making sure that they understand some of the terms that we do use. It's helpful for you, too, if you're doing that big picture planning, to understand some of the planning frameworks that are shown in the presentation slides from 20 to 25. So make sure that you take some time looking at those. I've pulled some different examples, mostly from Nunavut and Yukon. I'm hoping to share some in the future from NWT as well. So regardless of how simple or complicated your plan is. As I said, a plan should show what you want to accomplish and how you'll get there. And as slides 18 and 19 point out, you want to adjust how you create and present a plan. It's going to be created and presented based on your local situation, your community, and the purpose or reason for planning. So you have to kind of think of those things. Not every plan will look the same. So I've seen a lot of similarities, for example, in Nunavut among the strategic plans for the TSROs, which is Territorial Sport and Recreation Organizations. So those TSROs, although they're doing different sports, have similar approaches. So it makes sense to me that their plans look the same. But a community plan, from a small community might look very different to a big, broad-scale plan. So just be familiar with the fact that there's different types of ways of creating that plan. So one way that I think of planning, and I came up with this when I did some work in Nunavut for a community recreation planning tool to help communities in Nunavut with community recreation planning. And you can think of it, the acronym REC, short for recreation. And I see the steps as getting ready, so finding the right people, making sure you got time and money, as Deanne pointed out, having a team if you need it, figuring out your process, and then engaging people. So making sure, as Scott said, that they're involved, listening to their stories, figuring out what their priorities are. And then C stands for create, which is writing the plan, validating it back with whoever needs to approve or validate it, and then going a little further to figure out how you're going to implement and evaluate it. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to sort of, if you have a, something that you're thinking of planning, and you don't, you can pass on this question if you want to, but if you have an activity or, well, not an activity, if you have a broader plan that you're working on developing, what I'd like to know from you is, oh, sorry, I'm on the wrong question on my notes. I'm going to backtrack on that. So think about what you just mentioned that is important for you for planning. So, for example, Gan, you said budgeting. And Scott, you talked about involving and communicating, making sure everybody knows what's expected of them. So what I'd like you to do is think about that activity and then tell me, is it part of step one, which is step two, or step three? So is it part about getting ready, getting others involved, or creating the plan? And I'm going to rotate our order. So we'll start with Scott, and then Peter, Trista, Nathan, David, and Gian. And so, for example, just while you're thinking, Scott, with my example about writing things down, that's probably part of creating the plan, which is step three. So, Scott, what are your thoughts on, you talked about making sure everyone knows what's expected of them.
So you just want me to mention which part is of the process is?
Yeah, do you think that that is part of getting ready to plan, getting others involved, or creating the plan?
I think it can be involved as early as number one, but definitely step two, getting people involved.
Yeah, that's right. So that's what I sort of see, that communication, as you said, if it happens a little earlier, it's easier for people to see themselves in it and be part of that. So thanks. Over to Peter. Peter, you mentioned, I'm just trying to check my notes here. They're all over my page.
I said,
was that yours?
It was communicating with other people and getting their feedback. So
that's great. So that would be step two as well. Okay. And how about Trista, if you can pop in, you've got step three, creating the plan, so the writing part and writing it down. So we've got, so far we've got two step threes and two step twos. So awesome. How about Nathan? You talked about sort of referring back to your mission at the top as you're working on the plan. Would that be step one, getting ready, step two, engaging, or step three, creating the plan?
I know it's right when you're writing the plan, you put it right on top, but it's like getting ready, like the idea first. So, but yeah, I'm leaning more towards create.
Yeah, you probably have to be thinking about it right from the beginning, right? Because getting ready also knows what is about what the purpose of your plan is. But it definitely comes out when you're creating the plan too. So I would say you're probably right, like three, but also a bit of number one as well. Might also be a bit of number two, because you might have to involve other people because and make sure that they know what the purpose is and your mission. So a little bit of everything for what you shared. Thanks, Nathan. David, how about yourself? You talked more about the outcomes and being able to measure them. Would that be part of step one, step two, or step three?
Again, I think measurables are something that have to be introduced at the beginning as a step one. It helps develop the framework. Why are we doing this? What is our outcome, projected outcome, desired outcome, and how are we going to get there? What are the measurables that are going to enable us to know that we're staying on track? So if you can outline those at the beginning, that stops you from going every which direction, which plans have a tendency to do. They get a life of their own.
Exactly. So, and it might also be an engaged part because you might be having conversations mm-hmm. about what you're looking for with other people.
Exactly.
So it's in those conversations with other people mm-hmm. that you explore those. And Gian, how about the budget? Do you think that that's step one or three?
I think the budget is the most important part, but I'm thinking also it's a plan one as well as plan two, right? So getting something on the paper first, what you're going to do, So that's getting ready to the plan. And then the two, so the one part comes maybe in the second part. Get a thing, other things involved into, right? So accordingly, we can, once we have a blueprint of a big idea about the, what we're going to do, and then we can start figuring out, okay, we can do this also, we can do that also, right? So we can involve other factors too. But it's like, to me, one and two, it could be one as well as two for sure. And money goes like all the way along, right? One, two, three, there we are. And it changes depending upon, you know, so that's why we carry some extra funding or stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the scope of the plan that you're working on. If you're working on a special project, like let's say, Nathan, you're working on your after-school programming for an entire year and you're planning that out and what it might look like, you probably would have to have a really good idea of your budget up front. But if I'm working on a five-year strategic plan that gives broad, high-level direction to an organization or a community, I don't need to know the exact budget, but I do need to know what the capacity and the resources of that community or organization are. Because I've seen a lot of strategic plans where there's lots of really ambitious goals in there, and then people just can't pull them off. And then you go back and you're disheartened because your plan, you're not able to carry part of it out. So it's really important, regardless of what level you're planning at, if it's not your budget you're having a sense of, have a sense of the resources, the people, and your capacity to carry it out too. So thanks. It's interesting to sort of just talk through this, because you will, over your work careers and in your personal lives, do many different types of planning. And there needs to be some flexibility in how you piece it all together. But it's also interesting to have sort of a general thought process, because if you're working with other people, identifying what that process is can have a lot of value. So I often talk about planning to plan, and to me that's the step one, getting ready. There's a lot of time I often put in planning to plan, which sounds bizarre, but anyways, just something for you to think about. So if you have a look at slide 20, slide 20 encourages that you to choose a framework for your plan. And again, that will depend on the reason why you're planning. And a plan can be fairly simple, like a one-pager, or it can be quite complicated, like many, many pages. Hopefully you don't go for many pages, because those are hard to use, the shorter ones, personally. Although words are important in a plan, it's also amazing to have a visual framework, something that might look like a map or a path to help other people understand your plan. So I would really encourage you guys to take a look at, in the Explore More section, I have a link to, and Nathan, maybe you can help me pronounce this, I think it's Nunalit Aljut, which is, and my apologies for pronouncing it incorrectly, it's Nunavut Sports Physical Activity and Recreation Framework, and I had the privilege of working with the Government of Nunavut Sport and Rec Division and all communities on this, and there's a really amazing graphic in the middle that is, we have some people lay it out, but it's a visual that really reflects the whole plan. So I think that, you know, having things in a page like that that you can visualize and share that with people really helps people understand. So if you scroll to slide 21, one type of framework is, we were talking about outcomes last week, so it was an outcome-based logic model. And we've covered this a little bit. I find that it's kind of linear for me, but it's also important to understand, because sometimes funders ask you for a logic model, and you go, huh? What's a logic model? And then you start looking it up, and you get all these complicated things. So I've worked logic models into this learning event so that you have an idea of what it is. So in a logic model, you start with something that you want to do, like a project or programming. And usually what you want to do is because you have something that you want to change. You're looking for a change. So make sure that you answer why you want to do that. So you want to have an after-school program. Why do you want to do that? That's your outcomes, the outcomes that David talked about. And outcomes are anything from short-term changes, like I have a program running 3 days a week after school, to long-term changes that you expect. And sometimes they can be changes in things like knowledge, awareness, behavior, skills, or bigger outcomes like youth are engaged after school, there's less vandalism, we have healthier kids, we have healthier, more connected communities. So your outcomes can be smaller and shorter or longer as well. So in a logic model, once you know where you're going and why, then you start to figure out how to get there. And the how you're going to do it is the inputs. And input simply means what you need to go in to do what it is that you want to do. And usually you can think of inputs like a budget, like Yan mentioned, like staff. It might be equipment or materials or supplies. It might be a space to run something. So inputs are the things that you need. Okay? And when you have those inputs, it's then possible to carry out activities, which is the next thing. And activities might be advertising, workshops, programs, training. There's a whole range of things. So activities are action things. And then, as we learned last week, outputs come from the activities you do. So the outputs could be X number of kids in an after-school program, X number of training activities, things like that. A new facility built would be an output. So as I said, a logic model is linear. It's kind of like a machine where something goes in, something happens, and something comes out the other end. So make sure you know what it is in case you had asked for it. If you don't like using it, don't feel you have to use it. So some people like something that's less linear and more circular. So on slide 22, and I apologize, there's quite a bit of explanation here, but I want to make sure we're all really clear on this. So slide 22 shows a strategic plan, and it's a little different than a logic model. Nathan mentioned mission, so you can see at the top there's a vision and then values or a mission that sort of guide where you want to go and guide your goals. Some people call goals strategic priorities. It doesn't really matter the language that you use. You just know that this vision and your mission or mandate drives what the big things that you're going to do, and from there there's smaller things underneath each one. So it breaks it down so that when you look at a strategic plan, that vision of what the future is broken down in the terms of the actions that you think will get you towards that future. So for another example of a strategic plan, again, look at Nunavut's Sport, Physical Activity, and Recreation Framework. It's got 5 goals, and it's got actions or ways to achieve those goals. So it's a really good example. A strategic plan is different to something like an annual or operating plan as well, so keep that in mind. Nathan mentioned mission, and a mission or a mandate is usually something about an organization, and it usually describes what an organization does, for whom, and how. And it's different to a vision statement, which is looking at your long-term, how you see the future. So try and keep that in mind as well. Strategic plans are also broader and generally last for longer periods of time, anywhere from probably 3 years to 5 years to 10 years. So what I'd like to do now is I've talked a lot, so I'm going to turn it back over to you with a question. And I'd like you to think of a time when you might use or might have used, it can be past or present or future, either an outcomes-based framework or logic model or a strategic planning framework. And my question to you, and I'm just going to pop it in the chat so you can think about it, because I'm going to put Peter on the spot first this time. My question to you is, what's the approach, like, for your example, and what led you to choose this approach? And if you have a hard time answering the question, that's okay. You can pass, listen to what everyone else says, and then we'll come back to you as well. So, Peter, do you have an example of when you might use an outcomes-based framework or logic model, as compared to a strategic planning framework? And you might have to unmute.
Yeah, sorry. I feel like if I don't really have a specific example, but I could answer the question kind of, if that, or would you rather?
Sure. I'll give you 30 seconds to come up with some type of answer. Sure.
Yeah, because I would probably use an outcomes-based framework when I'm, if I'm having a program that's funded by an organization that has specific goals in mind. So if the goal is increased physical activity, then I would need to be measuring the outcomes, how many minutes has this program made people physically active? Versus the strategic planning framework. I guess the Realtor program is a good example of that because we explicitly ask, the leaders, how many minutes were you physically active and how many unique participants there were. And that's just an easy way to gauge, volume of physical activity.
That's a good example. So your outcomes-based or logic model works well for a big program that you're responsible for and that has been running for 22 years now. And that program's reflected in RPA's strategic plan. So, really good example. Thank you. I think Trista had to step away. So let's go over to Nathan. Nathan, do you have an example of when you have or might use either the logic type model or outcomes-based framework or more of a strategic plan framework?
Yeah. The only things I can think of with my programs, the outcomes, because we have these summer day camps where we get 200 kids every summer, keep them out of trouble, playing games, structured play, and whatnot. Because we do that every summer, and then winter camp during the winter, and after school specials, the events, the Nunavut Moves. And the thing I think of with strategic planning framework is I'm trying to have a community, my complex repaired, renovation, and it's a $1.5 million job. I have to get budgets and quotes and find different funding partners, and I'm hoping it'll come out, it'll get repaired, the roof repaired, and new foundation, and new baseboards, but that's a $1.5, $2 million job, so that's what I think of strategic plan for Baker anyway.
Yeah, so that's a good example. So you shared, similar to what Peter has, is that programs might tend to fall more under the outcomes-based planning that we do, whereas I think when you're talking about a strategic plan, but you're talking about a building, we actually do capital plans. So if you go back and look at slide 11, there's loads of different types of plans. So that type of major project would come under a capital plan. And so it's a little different to both of those, but it's still a really important planning process and really important with that type of budget to engage your community and find out what needs to be done and how and when and everything. So thanks for sharing that. David, how about yourself? Do you have an example of when you would use either an outcomes-based framework / logic model or a strategic planning approach? And you're muted, so I can see your mouth.
Yeah, I just saw that. One that came to my mind, which is an outcome-based logic, is when I introduced wilderness first aid to British Columbia through the Richmond Nature Park. So with that, we had to put together all the various steps of location, personnel, just the whole nine yards. It was quite some time ago, but going through each of the steps with the desired outcome of developing the program to carry forward in British Columbia. And then the other, I thought you wanted to address both. So the other recent on the strategic was getting the Yukon Anti-Poverty Coalition seniors walking. And the objectives were network with the Anti-Poverty Coalition. The goals were to get people moving. The values was to increase healthy living with the final vision of longer life through better health.
Great. So that's a, you know, a very sort of targeted, but also crosses a couple of organizations. So you can see where those values and the visions and the sort of the matching of the two different organizations might be so critical and important. So thank you for sharing that. Guillaume, how about yourself? You just need to share an example of one or the other when you might use either an outcomes-based framework or logic model or a strategic planning framework.
So for outcome-based framework model, is like something like we're going to go for like the day camp as the this is that, and then or like 6 weeks program or 8 weeks program. We are focused on something like coaching program or something. So that's the outcome-based framework program. And when you talk about the strategic planning framework, so let's say as racket sports, we are looking to build a or develop a racket facility where all the racket sports are under one roof. So that's something will come under the strategic planning framework, if I'm not wrong.
That's great. Thank you. And Scott, over to you. Do you have an example of when you would use either or?
I guess in terms of using outcomes-based framework, it's definitely helpful when I'm sort of planning and, you know, pitching youth programming, because on the surface, a lot of it sounds like we're just, you know, playing games and goofing off, but there's really, you know, there's important outcomes that are tied to that. So when we bring it back to outcomes of, you know, literacy promotion and health promotion and mental health and harm reduction, all this kind of stuff, it makes everything make sense.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. So something where your audience is looking for specific broad outcomes, that type of model, because you could have the same outcomes in four different plans, but your inputs and activities and outputs might be different, right? And you could still show how you get those same outcomes in many different ways. Is that kind of what you mean too?
Sorry, I hit the wrong button.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. It's about being able to, you know, reach people where they're at, right, and still drive towards the same outcome.
Yeah, and whereas your strategic plan, some of those outcomes might be actually things that you value, right? So sometimes in a strategic plan, your mission of your organization might be a little different. Your vision might be aligned with some of those outcomes, or sometimes I see those outcomes like things like harm reduction or healthier people as being things that we value. So different way of positioning it. And I don't know, are there links between when you do outcomes-based plans and your, I'm assuming the Hay River Youth Center has a strategic plan?
Well, we're still in our first year of operation under the new society. So we haven't done a strategic plan with this board and with this society. So that's on the list of things to do this summer.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, great. Hopefully this will help you with some ideas for approaching that then. Well, thanks, everybody. Those are really good examples. And what I see, I jotted down what you said, and what I see is that things like the programming that we do, where the outcomes, we're looking for those specific health-related, behavior-related, attitudinal or skill-related outcomes, fit nicely in a logic model because you can show what you need to get there. Whereas a strategic plan gives you higher-level direction for a vision like improving the health of people living in certain circumstances. So different ways of approaching it. So just keep that in mind when you're planning. What type of framework would work well for what I'm planning? So before we wrap up the call, though, I'd like to ask you, if you have it open in front of you, to take a look at slide 24. And slide 24 is a circle, and it introduces a framework for Indigenous planning. And this is from BC, so it might not reflect what you experience in your community or your territory, but I just want to, I want to put it in as a different example of what a plan can look like or a framework for a plan. So as you might be able to see, if you can see the slide, the framework uses Indigenous ways to achieve outcomes that are defined by Indigenous people and communities. So some of the things that make Indigenous planning different from, you know, maybe how we've done things in our communities or our organizations, or those Western type approaches, are the ways that Indigenous planning might recognize and incorporate traditional knowledge, also cultural identity, customary laws, and Indigenous worldviews. So I'll give you an example, and then I'm going to ask you to share your perspective about how culture in where you are, in your community, your region, your territory, your province, influences the way or could influence the way you approach planning. And I'd also like you to consider that if you have any experiences with Indigenous ways of planning, that you might share some considerations or words of wisdom. So I'll pop the question in, and I'm going to, Nathan, I'm going to ask you to start this round because I don't think Trista's back yet, but while I pop the question in and you're thinking about it, I'll give you an answer to the question just while you're thinking about your own answer. So my question is, how does culture influence our approaches to planning? And my example is, a few years ago, I worked really closely with the Council of Yukon First Nations, and I helped them facilitate a Yukon First Nations wellness plan. One of the things that I learned very clearly, and I've never forgotten, is that any information that we gathered through that planning process belonged to the community. It was community knowledge. It wasn't my knowledge. I was privileged to be able to learn that and hear it. So as a non-Indigenous person, I found it really took me a while to shift my thinking. That wasn't what I was brought up in. It wasn't my cultural background. And I really had to open my eyes to see that there's other ways of approaching planning. And it took, and I learned to see the community as experts in their own right, not me as the expert. I was there to support a process, but they were the experts. And I found that that was a really important learning experience for me, and it's something that I've tried to honor in all the work I do. I see you guys as part of the community, and I see you all as experts, and we're all sharing our expert knowledge. So it's something I've tried to bring into all my work moving forward. So for me, that's one way that culture influences the way that I approach planning. So you may have an answer to this question. You might have some words of wisdom. If you don't have an answer, that's okay. You can pass too. But Nathan, I'd just like to ask you first, you know, how do you see culture influencing the way we approach planning?
Well, as a rec coordinator for Baker Lake, which is probably more than 90% Inuit, the people in Baker Lake are very modern. Everyone has cell phones, but their ideologies or their traditions, their culture is still kind of, I don't want to say outdated, but they still hold on to the past. The past is very important to my people. I tried to have a square dance on a Sunday. Everyone said, no, you respect Sunday. You respect the holy day. We relax. We don't do anything. Like, we keep it holy. So I had to learn to be very respectful. Like I said, everyone is modern today. They know everything, all the social media and everything. But we're still very old-fashioned in some ways, which is kind of like opposite ends, but it's true. So I had to learn how to organize my events around people so that I don't want to disrespect them or offend people. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Culture, that is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Culture makes a huge impact on coordinators, so, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Nathan. And I think probably, you know, although some of you know, you talk about your community being more modern, but also following traditional sort of ways or values or beliefs. And those are the ones that are probably most important to carry through from generation to generation. So some things can change as the world changes around us, but there's some things that are, as you said, very important to maintain and respect. And so those values and those belief systems definitely should influence how we approach planning. So thank you for that. David, over to you. Do you have any thoughts about how culture influences how you might approach planning?
Just off the top, because I was sidetracked here, sorry. I would address it by talking with a representative from that cultural group, because by no means would I want to introduce my thoughts, my culture onto them. I would be here to accommodate their cultural desires as opposed to imposing any other set ideas that I might have.
Yeah, that's great. So as an organization or as a community, making sure that you've got people involved. So if you go back to that slide that was ready, engage, your ready process is making sure that you have representation from the different people that are going to be part of what your plan is addressing. So if it's a strategic plan for an organization like Elder Active, and you've got people from different cultural backgrounds, you want to make sure that you've got some representation. It's not all, the middle socioeconomic retired woman who's very active and involved, right? So, you know, you want to have reflect who else that diversity. So thanks for sharing that. Deanne, how about yourself? What do you think? How does culture influence approaches to planning?
So what I have said, the big difference here is simply in Whitehall. When we see the culture here, so I want to talk about the work culture. And what I have noticed, specifically the sports organization, they run on the basis of volunteers. Like we have 80 to 90% people are volunteers. So what I have learned, culturally, ask people for volunteers to involve into some programs, right? Not just okay, everything is on the page, whoever is coming in and taking part or helping out, you have to pay. So it's a big difference I see here, in my thoughts. You can do your whole thing by just asking people, and people are really into helping and, supporting as a volunteer.
Great, thanks. So that's a different angle from culture. Sometimes we think of culture as ethnicity or where we grew up or things like that, but there's also that volunteer culture or sort of tendencies in a population to be one way or another. So that's great. Thanks for bringing that up, Deanne. Scott, how about yourself? How does culture influence approaches for you for planning?
I guess if I can just give an example of something that, I've been part of. A few years back, I was involved in a program with the GNWT called the DOPE Experience, and the idea was we were a group of facilitators and artists going around to do substance use education in all the communities of NWT. And so they brought in these consultants from Toronto, very, very smart, talented people to give us kind of a rundown on a kind of project that they had pioneered, which was, collecting stories from people in communities and then turning it into this cool interactive exhibit display. And then, of course, part of that, in order to create this bigger project of this, is that we were going to take these stories from the communities and put them on this map. So, anyone in the world could log on and see these stories. And of course, on the surface of it, that sounds really amazing. But kind of getting back to what you said, you know, the reactions that we started having from the folks in the room that, you know, are live in the North and are from the North and are Indigenous was, but these aren't our stories, right? We're actually going to communities and taking these stories out. So we need to be very careful about that. We need to make sure that, you know, we have proper permissions. We're doing it in a respectful way. So I think, you know, that sort of experience has definitely helped shape kind of my my lens in sort of dealing with planning in terms of taking into account different cultures, different traditions other than mine.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's a great example. I was smiling when you mentioned like a Toronto-based company, because sometimes in the North we tend to do that. We bring people in from outside, but we even though we're so diverse across the North, I would say the North has its own unique cultural diversity. I don't know if I can say that, but yeah, so that's a great example. Thank you for sharing that, Scott. And Peter, over to you. How does culture influence your approaches to planning?
Well, I think of culture as just sort of influencing everything, like from yourself, your behavior, your personality, what you prioritize, and what you believe in, I guess. And so if you're planning around something, and you have to really consider culture as a huge factor, evidently, because if you're coming from a different perspective and trying to impose your ideas and concepts that you think are valuable, they might not be as valuable or in the same way to someone else. So it's important to consider that when you're planning, and the demographic that you're targeting as well.
Exactly. Thanks. And that makes me come back to what Nathan was saying, is that what you just said made me think that culture actually morphs and it changes and it evolves. And I think that was very clear based on what Nathan had said right at the beginning, is that there's some things that have changed a lot and other things that haven't changed. So, you know, we need to be always learning from each other and adapting how we're approaching things that way. So thanks. I think that's a really important conversation to have around planning. You know, I appreciate the stories that you shared and the examples that you shared. So when you're tackling the rest of this learning event, I think everybody on the call has completed last week's required learning activity. So you just have one left to do for this week. And take a look at slide 25 and think about the different planning frameworks. And then your required learning activity asks you to pick either a framework or come up with your own framework. You don't have to use the templates that are there. You can, but you can also have your own. And just develop a plan for a project, a program, or a strategic, something bigger than what you would have done when you did the earlier learning event, which was PE 101. So that would be your required learning activity. It might take you more time than last week's required learning activity. But if I recall correctly, we don't have a learning event running next week, which means there's no conference call next week. So you do have a bit more time to work on this and work through it. Try to go through the Explore More section. I have added some things in there that you might find really helpful. And just remember that planning is something that you do every day at home, at work. And we've also done it in a number of other Rec North learning events, and those are shown on slide 27. So this wraps up our conference call for today. Oh, I'm right on the hour. Perfect. So I'd like to say Masicho, Nakarmik, Aquana, thank you so much for joining today. I'm going to stop the recording. If you have any questions, please stay on the call, and I'm happy to answer them. And if not, I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Thank you.